Man, where did we finish? 125, right?
So this is what we call the afterburn. It is already starting to rain. I don't know how hard it's going to get. I will try to take at least a little bit of comments and questions. We'll try to make this quicker than we might normally do. Okay, we're going to begin on this side with Angelique.
Thank you, Rabbi, for an amazing teaching today. Really appreciate it. So the other day I asked a question. This is along the same lines, but it really touched home
Yeah, it's got to be right
today.
There you go.
What you were saying and just the woman at the well. So I wrote a question. So if we come to Abba in full confident trust, Emunah, Abba will reveal Yeshua to us. Because for a very long time, I like Yahweh is abstract, not inside my, like Jesus used to be. I'm not trying to keep bringing that name up, but I'm kind of stuck there. Like, how do I have that knowing relationship with Yeshua, not just Abba? Like, do I just wait for Father to reveal him? Am I waiting for my eyes and ears to be open for that connection with him to be restored because it was so distorted that it's just still not there, not fully aware of who Yeshua is?
Okay, so there is so much from your experience in the churches that got horribly distorted. I think is the best way for me to say it. It's gotten distorted. And so you're trying to look for Yeshua through the context of how you understood Jesus when you were in the church. And so you're looking for a similar feeling or a similar experience or something similar to that instead of being open to a different way. And so you need to say, reveal to me that knowing relationship and let me help me to understand that that comes not necessarily the way I thought it was supposed to come because that's what I'm familiar with. And often that comes from an emotional thing. Okay? Often that comes from an emotional place. And so this is part of what we're trying to really understand is that this the emotion will be there. But it's not the emotion that we're seeking. And it's not the evidence of something. You've been on other places that were the wrong places where there was plenty of emotion. Okay? You've been in relationships with people where there was plenty of emotion. I mean, positive. You were excited. You were desiring. You were love, whatever emotion you want to put. And yet what happened? Disaster a lot of the time because the emotion was sort of what you were seeking. So it's the wrong measuring stick. So I'm not saying that's the only thing, but just realize that whatever you're looking for, be careful that you may have already found it, not knowing it, because you're looking for the wrong evidence of it. Okay? So what's knowing? Knowing is he says it, you understand it, you get it, you're doing it, now it's relational. You read it, it's informational. You take it in your heart and start doing it, it's relational. Okay, so if you understand that Yeshua is the walking, talking Torah, the more you understand the word, the more that you actually are now developing a relationship through the actual obedience and walking out and then seeing the fruit in your life. Okay? But we're still looking for that ooey gooey, that something, that intangible, that feeling. And that feeling is not what it's all about. We've had people leave, not just us, but other messianic Torah teaching congregations because there wasn't enough feeling. There wasn't enough, where is the jumping and jumping and screaming and yelling? And well, we did that during praise time a little bit, but they're looking for that emotional thing, that emotional response. Because it's an addictive thing. We get addicted to that. And this is the problem. Because then that's now a measuring stick when it's really a very poor measuring stick. Okay? So I'm not saying that you should never get emotional. I'm saying you should not be using that as your measuring stick of whether or not this is the right place or if this is the right thing or whether or not you even have a relationship with Yeshua. Okay? I will give you an example for myself. I never understood this till I understood the color code, personality test, whatever. When I understood myself, because I did say something, boy, my wife was like, never say that in front of people. But I once said, Uncle Bob can tell you this, we had a midrash, probably in 2000, 2001, at Sukkot, up in Dandridge, Tennessee, in the Mount Lake Ranch. And during that late midrash, I happened to try to explain that my emotions, my feeling for my wife is much more real than for my creator. And she's like, you're the rabbi, you can't say that. I said, but you don't understand. My love for my creator, my obedience, is not affected by that lack of emotional thing. My wife, who I see, who I can hold, who I can interact with, for a red personality, see, if I was blue, very different. But I watch you guys who can get to that place and tears are flowing and you're just feeling that vertical, whatever you're feeling, and I'm sitting here going, what is it that you're feeling? I don't know. And I'm not against you. I'm envious on some level. What is it? How do you get there? And then I realize I'm missing that piece. It's not because I can't get there. It's just that I have it in a different way. I feel exactly the same way you do. I believe, I trust, I submit, I love him just as much as you do. I just don't respond because of my handicapped personality, right? If they give you four different colors in the color analysis, I only have two of them. That clearly is a handicap in some ways. It's an advantage in others because I don't have the negative sides of those two colors, but I have none of the positive sides either. So it's a handicap. But I used to sit there going, in my mind, I'm literally wanting to grab you and say, what is it? What do you feel? What's happening in your heart and your mind right now? How do I get there? Because you look so incredibly connected at that time. And I was trying to explain to the people how I know how I can get about her. This is my wife. Especially then, we were newlyweds, basically. We were only married a brief time. Not that I don't feel just as much now, but you know, it was that excitement, that newness. But I watched you, and it had to do with that. I'm watching others, and they're crying, and they're connected, and they're feeling something I don't know and understand. That's all to say that it's okay. That may not be the way you're supposed to understand him. Maybe he's trying to tell you you're not supposed to that be the main way you figure out if we're connected. We're connected by covenant. I speak, you obey, we're connected. Amen? I speak, you're hearing the words, you're reading them, but you're not doing it, we're not connected. We're still doing a little of this non-connection stuff. You're aware of the stuff, but you're not doing it. That's a disconnect. You now become aware and you're doing it. We have a relationship. Does that answer your question? Kind of, okay.
So, reading Torah, being at the teachings, coming to the feast, and just moving forward in obedience. This is the relationship. I can hear his voice then in doing these things. It doesn't have to be those magical moments.
No.
It's just steadfast, staying true to the course that he set for me. And that's his voice coming into my life.
Amen. Look, when you come, hold on. I'm glad you want to clap, but let me add something first, then clap. When you come broken and damaged, which you have been, okay?
Yeah.
And coming through the structure, coming through the Torah, coming through his drawing you to this structure, this family, this process, and finding restoration to the broken parts and things being fixed and healed, that's a relationship. That should be all you need. It doesn't have to be a moment, a whatever, that I don't even know how to describe it because I've never had that. That's not what I get, okay? But you would know because you've had that in other places. But think about how you feel because of what he's done to bring you here, put you here, and you're not just here this moment, but in this ministry. And it's not about the ministry, but the fact that a leader is teaching Torah, hopefully with authority, and you've obeyed it because you're obeying him, and it's changed your life.
Yeah. Amen.
Okay, now you can clap.
Yeah.
Okay, this side. Okay, Mercy.
Thanks, Rabbi. I have two questions for you. And the first one is to find out if I did the right thing in this situation. So I was having a conversation with a family member and who is really steeped in Christianity. And one of the things, and I try to avoid these conversations, but one of the things that she said to me was, oh, you know, how can God allow millions of people to perish in terms of hell? And what I tried to explain to her is, you know, he is more concerned about quality than quantity. And when you look at, you touched on Noah, when you look at the children of Israel, only two made it through to the promised land. So one, I want to know, was that the proper way for me to have responded to that?
Okay, in a sense, I mean, you don't want to get into an argument about whether or not they're going to hell anyway. I mean, because we don't understand that. But at least perishing is still the same concern. And I don't know that I would use the idea of quality. Okay. He wants relationship. Okay? And those who choose relationship are choosing a covenantal obedience relationship. And so he, when you see what happened with Noah, all those that were doing evil, which means they were rebellious and not listening, died. When you look at Israel in the desert, those that were rebellious and not listening died, okay? So it's the whomsoever wills. Unfortunately, not a lot of people are willing to get off the self-sovereignty throne and allow him truly to rule, which means you have to submit to that authority and obey. It's a relationship. He will have that relationship with as many who are willing, once he opens their eyes, to have it. But sadly, it's a very small percentage. I mean, one of the things I jokingly say, but it's really not so joking, it's really sad, is that when I look out on a regular enough basis and talk to other leaders, I said, I can't tell you how often the remnant keeps looking smaller and smaller. The groups that show up look bigger and bigger, but how many people are actually getting it and listening, percentage-wise, when I see what's out there? I don't mean here necessarily in this room, but I mean when you look at the whole group of people that claim to be Torah observant, believers in Messiah, they're doing all kinds of things that show relationally they're not getting it. And so you wonder, you know, maybe that 144,000, that's a pretty small number considering all the billions of people that are alive in the world. And I don't know what it's pointing to. Don't ask me to tell you who's in it and everything else. But the point is, it's a small number, whatever it's pointing to. And when you talk about a remnant and people think the church is a remnant, they're one third of the planet. There's like 3 billion Christians. That can't be a remnant. It's a majority. Okay? But the Torah observant community that are in covenantal relationship, that's a small group of people. So yes, generally speaking, you answered it well. Don't worry about necessarily so much how I just gave her an answer that may not be what you should do when you're talking to your family member. You have to know your family member. Okay? But that's where you kind of want to explain. Say, look, he's looking for a relationship. And they say, well, yeah, we know that. Well, but you have to figure out what he defines a relationship by. What kind of relationship does he want? I believe he wants an Exodus 19 relationship. If you will obey everything comes out of my mouth, I will do everything else. Paraphrasing, okay? Thank you.
And I should be thanking you. Thank you. The second question is, you touched on it a little bit, and you do sprinkle it sometimes through your messages. But can you give us a quick synopsis again of recognizing and knowing what the fivefold ministry is, what their duties are?
Okay, yeah, we can talk about that real quickly. Ephesians chapter 4. Okay? Verse 11, and he himself gave some as emissaries, those are apostles or emissaries, or a shaliach, a sent one, prophets, evangelists, shepherds, and teachers. Okay, these are not a vertical ranking with the apostle at the top and the teachers at the bottom. Okay, they're just different roles. Some of them have a little bit more authority than others, but it has nothing to do with a vertical alignment of the five in this order. Some of them, apparently, some Christianity sections look more impressive on your business card. Some people put two or three of them on there. Evangelist, prophet, shepherd, so-and-so. Okay, whatever. All right? So it's simply functions. There are five different functional things. Okay, so the disciples were sent out. They were called apostles or emissaries. In the Hebrew, it's a shaliach or the shluchim. Sent out ones. And so they were sent out to seek that which was lost. They were sent out to find the scattered Israelites by going into a town and seeing who was ready to hear and receive the message, who was being drawn, right? The father must draw. And if nobody, they would brush themselves off, go off to the next town. If there were somebody's, they would share the information. And those people would probably, as you can assume, want to gather together and organize so that they can support each other and function in the function of a community. So the apostles or the emissaries were the ones who were congregation planters. This is what makes Paul an apostle. Not one of the 12. He's not counted in the 12. Doesn't have the same authority as the 12. But yet we call him apostle because he's a sent out one. Okay? And so if I were to start going around, and I do very rarely, and plant some congregations, in that function at that time, I'm acting with the role or the hat of an apostle. Okay? It's not a great grandiose title. It simply means I'm one who's going out and helping to plant something. However, I'm not going to do all the rest of it if I'm just an apostle. I'm going to be looking for some of these other four other guys who are going to do the other things necessary for a congregation. The congregation is going to need people to know that there's a congregation. We call those evangelists. Those are the excited vocal promoters. Hey, everybody, you got to come over here and check this out. This is incredible stuff. You need to hear this teaching. This will blow you away. This blew my mind. It changed my life. Blah, blah, whatever. Okay? You guys who get excited and the teaching comes out and you repost it on your Facebook and you share it with all, you have an evangelist heart in there somewhere. Okay? That doesn't mean that you should be standing up in a tent doing the big speaking. That's what Christianity decided an evangelist was. Okay? It's really the promoter. You need somebody to let people know where we exist. This is over here. You might want to check it out. We're not proselytizing. We're not trying to change their mind or convert them. We're simply saying, hey, there's something over here you may want to look at. You may want to check this out. Okay? That's the evangelist. If you have a little congregation forming, you're also going to probably need a teacher. Somebody has to teach you what to do, how to do it, where to do it, when to do it, why to do it. Okay? That's the teacher's role. You're probably also going to need a shepherd who's going to be concerned about you, love on you, make sure you don't stray off anywhere and get hurt. That's a shepherd. So what would that look like today? We have shepherds in the congregation. If you're in our congregation locally and you miss a week, the shepherds in the congregation, they don't know who they are. I haven't given them anointings and titles. They'll notice that you weren't there. They will be concerned. They will call you up or text message you or whatever they're going to text you or Facebook you or something. Are you okay? We missed you this week. Can I do anything for you? That's a shepherding sort of heart. But you need someone whose job it is to shepherd. Because you need somebody that's watching out. They're the one that if your spouse is in the hospital, is sitting with you in the waiting room, comforting you, waiting for what's going on. Okay, the apostle's probably not doing that. He has other things he's doing. The teacher's probably not doing that. He has other things he's doing. The evangelist is busy getting everybody just to come to the congregation. Okay? And then you have the prophet. The prophet is the one that comes in. You have a shepherd taking care of you. You're being taught so you know what to do and when to do it and all that other things. You got somebody who's kind of getting everybody excited, knowing you exist. But now you need someone to come in with the mallet who's playing whack-a-mole. Who's saying, you know what you're supposed to be doing, right? Then why aren't you doing it? That's the prophet's role. Wake up. Let's get going. Stop goofing off. That's the prophet's role, right? Cry aloud, spare not, speak the word with authority. Okay, did that answer the question? All right. Now, that doesn't mean that you need five different people to do this. It's very helpful if you have that. But you may have one person wearing all of the hats until somebody shows up that can wear one of them. And then he can take that one off because it hurts the neck to wear five hats, I can promise you. Okay? It's good for a sore neck, I promise you. Okay? But when I'm teaching tithing, for example, or feast keeping, for example, a Shabbat keeping, for example, a kashrut, I'm doing teaching. But usually within the teaching, I'm also saying, and you need to do this. So you're getting a little bit of teaching and prophet at the same time, teacher and prophet at the same time. Okay? We have a website. We have YouTube videos. That's the role of an evangelist. We're making it available to people. We're getting it out there. Getting it out there means making it available. Getting out there doesn't mean I'm going and bothering people, poking them on the shoulder, going, hey, excuse me, do you know about this stuff? Excuse me, have you heard this? Excuse me, do you know about the Messiah? Excuse me. No, that's not evangelism. But if it's new someplace, by the way, just so you know, we got a new congregation over here. Might want to check it out. Might not be for you, but hey, you just need to know it's here. Okay? You do this already. Let's say you go out and you buy a product of some sort. And it just blows you away. It works better than you thought. It's amazing. It does everything and more than they said it would. What do? If you're an evangelist type person, you go out and tell everybody you know. If you're not, you just enjoy it and probably don't say very much unless somebody happens to say, you know, I'm really struggling with my other product, but this is a different brand, and it really doesn't work very well. Oh, yeah, bye. Listen, I got this other one. It works great. But you're not the evangelist running around telling everybody, oh, my gosh, this is so awesome. I bought this thing, and it's amazing. The evangelist is just the person that loves to tell everybody about everything they're excited about. This is great for me. It'd probably be great for you, too. You might want to check it out. Did I answer the question? Okay. Okay. So, as a red, yellow, with no blue and no white, I don't do a very good shepherding job. Okay? Not a lot of warm fuzzies. But you know what people will tell you when they counsel with me and they need it, they get the compassion and they get some of that. I can bring that out when necessary. Doesn't. So you're thinking, we never hear any of that. I'm prophet teacher up here. Okay? I'm not claiming to be. I'm saying that's the role that I'm functioning in. The way I teach is sort of a hybrid prophet teacher. So you're not going to get a lot of the, you know, warm fuzzies. Because I'm up here trying to make sure that you know what you need to do, how to do it, all the details of a teacher, and then I'm going to hit you with as much lightning as I can to get you motivated to do it. Yes, sir. Amen?
All right. Hey, Justin Rodriguez says, Rabbi, can you talk about our referring to Isaiah 12, verses 1 through 6 in correlation to what we read, John 7:37?
Say it again one more time.
Isaiah 12, 1 through 6, the correlation, is there a correlation to John 7:37?
Yeah, I'm sure there is some of that there. Look, it says, in that day you shall say, I thank you, Yahweh, though you were enraged with me, your displeasure has turned back, and you have comforted me. See, El is my deliverance, I trust and I'm not afraid. For Yahweh is my strength and my song, and he has become my deliverance, and you shall draw water with joy from the fountains of deliverance. Okay? So absolutely, this certainly is a thematically connected point here. All right, next one.
From Evangeline Agalasso, Psalm 119, verse 116, because of my expectation. Is expectation deliverance from something you're suffering from?
Okay, so I think I explained it during the teaching, but the expectation is like you have an understanding, and based on your understanding, you have an expectation of how things work. If I do this, this is what I expect will happen. If I respond to something this way, this is what I expect would happen. He says, support me according to your word that I might live, and put me not to shame, because I expect that if I put your word first, if I do things the way I understand it, the way you put it to do, that I should not end up in a place where I'm ashamed. Next question.
Okay, from Meslam Garcia. Rabbi was talking about the living waters and being thirsty for Yah. It automatically took me to Psalms 42:1-2. Am I correct to associate this to thirst for life and wanting that intrinsic nature?
Look, all of these verses are absolutely connecting when you see those themes that are connected. When it says things like, my being thirsts for Elohim, for the living El. It says that we hunger and thirst for his righteousness. It talks about at some point there's going to be a famine of the word, and we're going to be hungry and thirsty and it won't be available. And so all of these things are thematically connected, absolutely.
I guess last one I have right now is Brandy, and she's reply, or I guess a reference back to the first question. It says, the first question, it says, what are we looking for when Yah confirms the work of our hands? She's referring to Psalm 90, verse 17.
And let the pleasantness of Yahweh, our Elohim, be upon us and confirm the work of our hands for us. Oh, confirm the work of our hands. Okay. So again, verse 16, though, says, reveal your work to your servants. So he says, reveal your work to your servants, the work you want us to do, and then confirm when we do it by giving us what you say we'll get to confirm that we're doing it right. Did that make sense to everyone? Okay. But notice what I do. I have to read the verse, and then I have to start going backwards and forwards. In this case, there was no place forward to go. It's the last verse of the psalm. But to go backwards and say, okay, what has been going on leading to this point? And all I had to do is go back one point. It says, reveal your work to your servants. And then he says, oh, Yahweh, let your pleasant be upon us again. Confirm the work of our hands as we're doing your work. Or confirm that it's not your work, because we'll get a result either way. One that confirms that we're doing it right or doing it wrong. All right, let's go ahead and wrap it up. Wait, Janet's got her hand up. How could we go without Janet having her hand up? Now, wait. I need to first find out if it's two or three.
I just have two. Will that
two,
be okay?
Okay. See, I knew. Okay.
All right. You started with John 4, but whoever drinks of the water I give him shall certainly never thirst. And it says that the water that I give him shall become in him a fountain of water springing up into everlasting life. So that took me to Jeremiah when it says, you know, and the same with Psalm, it's the same, says the same thing. For he shall be like a tree planted by the waters, which sprouts out his roots by the river. So I'm thinking about the concept of water, which obviously brings life, makes everything grow, and thinking even of the water that we have right now. I was thinking, since it connects it to everlasting life, is it correct to think that it connects you to everlasting life because the Torah will be basically, I mean, we're going to be following Torah pretty much in everlasting life, and we'll be following everything that comes from there, like the fruits of the Spirit and all that, will be everlasting. Everything that is from Him will continue to live, I guess, or reproduce, and that's how we should, in my head, I kind of connected it like that. I don't know if that makes sense.
You know, I guess it makes sense. Well, look, the metaphor there, and Psalm 1 has the same idea right there. In Psalm 1, look, blessed is the man who doesn't walk in the counsel of the wrong, but his delight is in the Torah. He meditates day and night, but because he's like a tree which has roots, and the roots are soaking up the water by the river. It says, the tree that's planted by rivers of water that yields its fruit. Yes. So because he's focused on the Torah, he's meditating on it day and night, he's not doing and hanging out with the, walking in the way of the wrong, he's not walking like the wrong walk, because it's drinking in the roots that's being sustained by the rivers of living waters. So that theme plays out throughout that whole deal. Okay?
All right, and then the other
several places. Prophets talk about it. Obviously, Messiah talked about it. It's a powerful theme throughout.
Yes.
Okay.
And when you were talking about the clay and how we are clay, we have to be pounded to become into His image. So in that pounding, I have to trust that He will show me the areas where I need to change. Trusting that whatever happens, He will show me what I need to change and listen to that and make the necessary changes so that I can become like Him. Is that a good way to understand that? That the trust that He will show me, you know, the areas in my life. Of course, I need to seek because if I trust my heart, it says the heart is deceiving, but I need to kind of trust that He will, through His word and maybe through our anointed appointment leader, to trust that He will show us the areas where we need to grow and change.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. All right, anybody else? Let's go ahead and wrap this up. I know Rabbi Tom.